Oh, okay.
Here we are, Jim Dale and Margaret Cho. What's the date today? Today is March 25th.
25th, yes.
2014?
Yes.
All right. Well, you're known as a liberal activist, feminist.
Yes.
Very pro-gay.
Yes.
Voted for Obama.
Yes.
Twice.
Campaigned for Obama, actually.
Campaigned for Obama.
But then I got fired from the campaign because I said some really rude things about Sarah Palin. And so I was... quickly deleted.
What did you say about Sarah Palin?
Well, I said that I really don't like her politics, but I really want to fuck her.
Wow.
And, you know, I just, it was really rude. I shouldn't say things like that about people, but I mean, you know,
it's better than making fun of her kid.
Well, I did meet, Bristol, one of her children, much later, and I was so embarrassed to meet her because I had said these horrible things about her mother. And
she had a nice pair of Bristols on her, though.
She's a beautiful girl. She looks just like Sarah. She's got, like, Palin face, and she's a gorgeous girl.
Well, the thing is, I mean, there's a whole progressive package there.
There you can see where, you know, the apple does not fall that far from the tree.
Well, I mean, with you, like, the politics.
Yeah, for sure.
So the first question is, why would you even talk to me?
Well, I've been a fan of yours since I would say 1992 or 93.
For Answer Me,
and I have all of the separate issues of Answer Me, and then I also have the compendium much later when you put them all together in one big book. And then because I always really appreciated your voice. I mean, I felt like it wasn't. Political in a way that I had experienced. It was you were experiencing and relating all truth, that it wasn't just one side. It was all sides as you experienced it, and I appreciated that.
Because we were talking earlier, I kind of have a tolerance problem. Not me tolerating people tolerating me.
Well, people get really mad at you. People get really angry with you. And I remember seeing you once you came to a show of mine at Reed in Portland.
Yeah.
And I think you were scared because you were coming right into the epicenter.
Belly of the beast, right?
The belly of the beast. And you had already had a lot of problems in Portland because of your, I guess, image, but also things that you've
actions.
Written, your actions. But, you know, you also have incredible defenders in Portland, like myself, like Chuck, who, you know, we're...
Chuck Palahniuk. Right?
Yeah. We're both... considered, I guess, liberal people, but we see behind this idea of what people have about you.
Well, he was easily the most famous writer in Portland, and what I admired was he was willing to say that I was a human being, whereas most people weren't.
But you're a really profound human being, and I feel excited getting to hang out with you, but I've also been a fan for a long time, and I know that it's hard because people have a preconceived notion about what you do, and I feel like they don't really know all the things that you've been through. They don't know your entire story.
Yeah. Well, I can do nothing but appreciate that. One thing I wanted to clarify, you went out with Quentin Tarantino.
Yes, yes.
And you said you gave him Answer Me?
I did.
And you think that might have been the basis of Natural Born Killers?
I think so. Well, I think that when I gave him... your magazines, that it really opened up another channel for him to think about the way that he was writing and think about the way that he was looking at the world. And then he and I both really idealized your relationship with Debbie. And we thought that is magic, that they found each other, that they're together, that they create together. And I feel like he internalized that feeling of this incredible killer couple who could really do anything, and in the base of that, they had their love, which is the prevailing thing that I got out of Answer Me, is the incredible love that you had for each other and appreciation that you had for each other.
Okay, now you're Korean, full.
I'm full blown.
Full blown Korean. I've had a lot of bad experiences with Koreans.
Oh, really?
There was a doctor. I'm not gonna. Put him on Front Street by saying what city, but he was always passive aggressive, and he would say things like, you know, Goad, you're gonna die like Nelson Algren, penniless and unknown, but you'll leave a legacy. And he would always get in these like passive aggressive jabs, and I've got this stalker book coming out. Mm-hmm. Probably the most dedicated one was a Korean war vet.
Oh.
Is there something about the Korean mentality that... Because I've never had bad experiences with other Asians, just Koreans. Yeah.
Well, we're enthusiastic to the point of lunacy. I mean, we are dogged in our pursuit of whatever that is.
There's a double into dogged might be a bad stereotype there.
Oh, well, I mean, it's really an intense thing. Koreans can be very, sort of, again, with the dog thing, very attack-oriented.
Yeah.
They're sort of a warlike. People always sort of credit the Japanese as being a warlike race, but I really think the Koreans, quite a sort of a warlike warrior.
Obsessive?
Very obsessive and detail-oriented. And they have this thing in Korea called the netizens, where they tear each other down online. They'll like attack a public figure and stalk them online. We are natural-born stalkers, I think.
What is it, just like China ready to eat up? In the Korean Peninsula, and defensive.
In Japan, I think it's all of the invasions.
China and Japan.
All the invasions, all the people trying to lay claim on us, and part of the culture. We are a fierce warrior race.
How many Asian comedians do you know?
I know quite a few.
Really?
I know. Because
there is kind
of
a stereotype that they're not the most human, comedy oriented.
Yeah, I think, well, also in all of the arts, Asian Americans in general, we're encouraged by our families to not pursue them because there's a lot of fear around not pursuing things that they understand. And the arts is one of the things that, unless it's like classical music or things that they can sort of see a precedence, that there's a hard thing to go into the comedy, which there's no equivalent in Korea, in South Korea, for stand-up comedy. So it's a hard thing.
They don't even have stand-up in
They have comedy in they have comedic hosts on television and comedic television shows, but they don't have that same tradition of stand-up comedy.
What would Koreans typically consider funny?
I think that it's all in context, like social things. But Korea is very... South Korea is in a lot of ways a very conservative culture. Like, if you're suspected of doing drugs, they will cut your hair and do a drug test on your hair. And if you've had drugs in the last 2 years, you can go to prison. So
that's South Korea.
Yeah, that's South Korea. Okay. So it's a very it's a very, very intense culture.
Conformist.
Mm-hmm. Like if you're suspected of smoking pot in a show business sort of. If you're a celebrity at all, you'll have to drop out of your profession and do some sort of penance somewhere else.
I know it's considered sinful to stereotype at all these days, but mm-hmm. my general impression is that Asian culture is more conformist than or collectivist than...
Yes.
I mean...
It can be.
European culture is more individualist, which I think may work against it in the long run.
Yes. The thing about it is that Asian American culture is still yet to be determined because, you know, our culture here is still informed much by tradition from our countries, so it's hard to say. So, but from my background, from my Korean culture, there's a lot of conservatism and a lot of conformism, if that is even a word.
Did your parents dislike Chinese people?
Oh, they disliked, I think, everyone. But
everyone but Koreans?
Well, even Koreans. They're even worse with Koreans.
Really?
Yeah. And part of my family is actually North Korean, and that's the most hated of anybody. So,
well, was that, do you think that was just engineered by communists versus capitalists?
Yeah, I think that's...
That wasn't a natural
I don't know if rivalry. It's a natural rivalry, but we'll find a rivalry wherever one can exist.
Or create one where it doesn't exist.
But I, like you, had a genealogy test with the blood, like the DNA test, and it was uncovered by Henry Louis Gates Jr., that I am actually Chinese. So as you are not as French as you thought you were, I'm not as Korean as I thought I was.
So there was a Chinaman in the woodpile.
Yes, literally.
All right. What stereotypes about Asians are false?
I feel like the bad driver thing is false.
I never noticed that.
I mean,
in my experience, black chicks.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that was mostly in L.A. I never really noticed. I can I find a lot of differences, you know, in racial habits, but driving, the only thing I ever noticed is a lot of black chicks would cut you off in traffic. Mm. Yeah.
I could never say it's a racial or social thing that makes for a bad driver, but as far as myself, I am pretty excellent driver. I'm a really excellent motorcycle
driver. What's the stereotype? They drive too slowly? Or?
I think both, that they just drive ineptly, that they drive too slow, too fast, whatever, that they don't signal or they signal too much or... I don't know. There's a lot of different things.
Road rage?
I don't know. Yeah, not road. Not probably not road rage. Probably not road rage.
That's a white guy thing.
Maybe.
I've had quite a few road rages.
Are you a road rage?
Oh, come on. We don't want to dredge up all that stuff.
See, I don't think of you as being an angry person. I've never thought of that yet. You.
The thing is that's sorry. I don't
know. No, but you're thinking about. You think about the way that you're perceived. I think that maybe that is one of the things that you are called sort of the angry voice, that you are angry, but I don't perceive you as angry.
I think it's, I kind of act however people expect me to. If people are nice to me, I'm nice. And if they expect me to be a dick, then I'll show them that side.
Mm.
If they don't give me the benefit of the doubt, then they're going to see a dick. But it's like people like you and, you know, very few, and the weird thing is they're mostly comedians, like Patton and
Patton loves you.
What is it about, why would comedians, whereas writers don't like me, but what is it about, why are comedians more open-minded?
I think comedians appreciate genius, and they recognize it in all of its forms.
Yeah.
You know, and that, Patton is brilliant. Patton is really...
I've known him 20 years.
Yeah.
Ever since Answer Me.
Yeah. He and I connected a lot about your work and talked a lot about you, and... We have been fans for a long time, but he is also somebody that is very devoted to celebrating what he loves. So he's a good fan to have.
What is it about comedians like good writers or, you know, ballet artists or filmmakers? Like, comedians were picked on more, you think?
Yeah, I think we're more bullied. We're more of an outsider art form.
Okay.
And then your writing is really an expression of outsider art. So... That's something that we're connecting on.
I just want to... I can't express this because this is going to be transcribed. I'm cringing a lot of this.
He's brilliant, though. Right.
What stereotypes about Asians are true?
Well, you know, when I cook, my house does smell really bad.
Why? Kimchi?
It's kimchi, and I do like to ferment. And so fermenting for me is just as important as like the cooking process or any transformative thing that you do with the cooking. Fermenting is really one of the true cooking arts, culinary arts.
What do you master. Ferment?
All vegetables, fish. Fish is fermented can be fish. Really stinky.
Yeah.
You know, it can be rank.
I think the first Korean I ever ran across was right after I got out of high school. I went to a little grocery market in Upper Darby, PA, and through broken English, she asked me if I cut fish. I didn't cut fish, but I sorted apples or something. But fish cutting, I guess, was a job requirement at this place.
Well, you know, that's what we do.
Okay, now I was looking at an interview, and you described yourself as pansexual.
Yeah.
Now, I'm old enough. I remember back when there were bisexuals.
Yeah.
They don't seem to exist anymore.
No.
It's become this rigid thing where... The heterosexuality and gayness are genetic.
Right.
And it's not a matter of choice.
I don't think it is a matter of choice, but then there is a point where you become... For me, I'm really vulnerable to everybody. I fall in love with everybody to an extent. I mean, though, now it's changed because I'm married and I am committed in my relationship, and so I don't have that as much, but I still feel very free with my body and with my soul. You know, to fall in love with people of different genders and different types of people, different races, different ages.
Mm-hmm.
There, to me, is a lot to love.
So you would think that was more just genetically wired than a part of your experience and personality?
I think it's both. I think that for me, I'm genetically wired to just love everybody and to be super slutty.
Right.
But then I realize, it's just because my heart is open.
But there's this idea, you think there's fluidity and there's some choice.
There can be, yeah. I mean, there's choice when it comes to actually acting out on it and actually deciding, you know, to be. But I think everybody's experience is different.
Because back in, it was the 40s, Kinsey had a scale where it was like 1 to 7. 1, you're just totally straight, seven, you're totally gay. And mm-hmm. now it's like one and two. It's like one and the other. And I just wonder why it got that militant and rigid.
It becomes very politicized because being gay and all the different things you can be becomes very political.
Yeah.
And so people feel the need to align themselves with what they believe politically. But for me, it's kind of, I don't know, everything is sort of out there. Everything makes sense to me. I can justify it all.
At least try to believe not everything's political.
Yeah.
I mean, some things are just fun, or it gets tiresome after a while. And I wonder, I kind of have a theory. I think people kind of clicked up, like almost in gangs, rival political gangs. I think there's a general anxiety the world's falling apart.
Yeah.
And people want certainty. I kind of like the world more when it was a little more freewheeling. And
right.
You weren't judged, like, or treated as an enemy if you thought
differently. It's hard. I know, you're right.
Because when I was a kid, yeah, gay people were outcasts. Women were second-class citizens to a large degree. I think they still had advantages. They didn't have to fight the wars. But,
right.
But what the shift I've noticed is... you're an outcast if you think differently now.
Yeah, that's true.
And it didn't used to be, like, there used to be more tolerance for thinking and maybe less tolerance for some of the more superficial differences, like skin color and gender and stuff.
But think you're right, with thinking, like, people are suspicious if you can, if you think for yourself and not along the party lines of some...
Well, they don't even think you're sincere. They think you're, like, I get accused of, well, no, you're actually a conservative and you're just afraid to admit it. It's like, no, it's more complicated, and... They won't accept that.
No, you're right. It's so complicated.
Now, speaking how way things were when me, an ancient man, was a kid, because I saw something the most recent article I wrote was about shaming, public shaming, and I don't see really the difference between calling out someone for being an alleged racist these days than it was in the Puritan New England for calling them out for being demon-possessed. It's almost like... To me, it's the same kind of mob mentality, but you said something, you like shaming people.
Well, I like shaming people, but then I also shame myself, too. Mm. I think that shaming, you know, it's like we live in a society where every moment can be recorded and everything can be taken out of context.
Yeah.
So it's very unfair, too, because it's like really the way that you frame something that can change people's opinions about anything. So shaming, I feel like, it has its place,
right.
Maybe in a funner way, not as a sort of more destructive way.
But you see a lot of people like trying to get people to lose their jobs.
Of course.
Of course.
It's wrong. I mean, it's really wrong.
Yeah,
and
I think so, but that's not terrible. the prevalent move these days. It's like, get them, crucify them.
Right.
Run them out of town.
Right.
And my problem is, we were talking about this earlier, like, I'm shameless.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I might even be shy. You said I was humble. You're the first person.
I think you're quite humble.
You're the first person in the world that's ever said that. But you can't shame me because I'm cool. I know everything I've ever done, and I'm cool with it. You know.
Yeah.
Some things might be embarrassing. Some things I'm not proud of. But like shame, like I'm going to wear a hair shirt and repent for the crowd. It's like fuck the crowd. I never really respected the crowd. So why should they be able to shame me? But
That's good.
Yeah, I think so, but the people who, the shamers, don't understand that. So they just try harder.
Well, they try harder and they should keep trying.
It can't be, but like the only way they're going to shame me is like, well, okay, what I wrote it was 1907, it was 1909 that happened. You know, I'm kind of ashamed I got the fact. I'm that autistic or whatever where it's like, if I only get data wrong, then I'm ashamed.
Well, you're that precise, and it shouldn't happen
you
wouldn't get data wrong. You shouldn't. Yeah. You wouldn't.
Okay. What was the most unfair criticism that's ever been lodged?
Well, usually people like to say that I'm ugly, which is not fair, because that's more of a personal opinion. Like, I would never say that.
I get that all the time.
No, really?
Yeah.
Very handsome man. He's very humble. Example of humility.
But it's not, I don't, I mean, we were talking about this. I think I look like a, bald pterodactyl with AIDS.
No, you look like a very handsome, you look like a 1940s detective, which is very cool.
Okay.
It's like a Raymond Chandler character.
So when they go for looks, that's the most unfair thing.
Yeah, it's unfair because it's like the thing that you can't really control, at least for me, or I refuse to control. Like, I refuse to, like, whatever, work out or get plastic surgery or whatever, you know.
No plastic surgery?
Not yet.
Really? I had it in my early 20s.
Which is hard to imagine, but that's cool.
I was the first metrosexual. I'm the first ex-metrosexual.
Well, you look great.
Got a nose job, and I had just one treatment of hair transplants. Like, where you can see, like, right here, there's little bumps.
Oh.
But I never, that's cool. Never went for a follow-up. Every time I've tried to modify my body, it was a disaster.
Oh.
Like with this dumb tattoo that I got covered up, and it was supposed to be roses and thorns, but it got infected, so it looks like a dog turd on top of a
heart. I like it. Heart. It's very rockabilly.
Yeah, but it's yeah, cool. I might even get it removed. But
it goes with your rebellious attitude.
Are tattoos even rebellious, you think, these days? It's almost
not really. Yeah. Because everybody's got them. Because
it was, Truman Capote, like, in the 60s, wrote, like, he'd never seen anybody with a tattoo that wasn't a convict.
Yeah.
unfair, what about, like, your motive? Because one of the things I struggle with is, like, people are always, like, falsely trying to tell me what motivates me. Oh, you're only writing this because you hate blacks. Or
yeah.
Like, what, like, as far as your motives, what's the most unfair criticism?
My motives are, like, sometimes I've been accused of being racist myself, but that's usually, it's because I've, like, talked about my family or used an Asian accent when talking about my mother, but she really talks like that, so.
Who criticizes you, Asians or?
I think, it's never Asians, usually white people who get, like, feel like they I don't know, it's a politically correct thing where people feel like they've got to be a watchdog for whatever happens racially or, minorities.
It's always white people. Because Darius James is a black guy who pretty much got me my first book contract. Mm-hmm. And he wrote something in The Village Voice. He was at some Nelson Mandela parade in New York. Mm-hmm. And he, from memory, this was a long time ago, he said he wrote something about he wanted to throw coconuts at Nelson Mandela. Mm-hmm. And Richard Goldstein from The Village Voice, Jewish or white or both, depending on how you slice up that loaf of bread. He started giving Darius shit, like, how could you sell your own people out? And Darius like, hey, I'm the black guy here. Mm-hmm. Like, it's none of your fucking business how I don't want to treat being black.
Yeah.
It must be weird being lectured by white people about how you're supposed to be Asian. Like, why would they even...
Yeah. It's like you're being censored by this idea.
It's so condescending.
Yeah, it's like, condescending. It's like, well, you're condescending toward your race, but... If you're not my race, how would you know what that is?
And these are probably white people that are slamming just the idea of white people all the time.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird.
I mean, it used to be Jews, now it's white people are the biggest self-haters in the world.
When you talk about race, it becomes so complicated because it's other people's opinions about what being a racial minority is. And
right.
Who understands? I don't understand anymore.
No, I think it's gotten... I mean... I was on board. I was the guy with the black girlfriend in the 80s. And the script, so much of what I've read about too is like they flipped the script. It's now, when it was bold to be anti-racist, that was cool with it. Now when it's like the most cowardly thing you can do, like, let me get that. You know, I'm what you Koreans went through. Oh, yeah, I remember what the coolies did. It is like patronizing and just, the thing I hate about it the most is it's so fucking sanctimonious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I said in the Redneck book, like, if like Richard Pryor and Mel Brooks were doing stuff in the early 70s that they could never get away with now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's what we need to bring back. It's like, people are so fucking uptight, they're crazy.
Yeah.
And all the rule, and I was using the word microaggressions, like, you can't even breathe without being afraid that someone's going to sue you.
Right. Well, and with the way fuck, social media is, too, it's everywhere.
How the fuck did it... I would think something like that would, like, kind of loosen people up. And, oh, hey, you know, you meet all kinds of people, and it's... But it made people nuts.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. It's hard, though. It's a very strange phenomenon.
I mean, do you accept this... Because a lot of times, well, you know, if say, I were to walk down the street and 20 black people would beat me up and call me names for being white... It's still somehow impossible for them to be racist because there's this whole theory that racism was invented by white people to support white power and the white power structure. And I look around the world like, okay, have you been to Korea?
Oh, not for a long time. Not for a long time.
Would I be accepted in like an open arms?
No. It would be very hard. It'd be, actually, but you would have a much easier time than like any other. I mean, I think white people in Korea in particular have a really hard time there. But then it, there's gradations. I think it's harder, like the different races that you are. And then the hardest probably would be Japanese.
Okay.
So it's not necessarily that easy to figure out.
I forget. There is a term for it. It's like that you actually hate people who are just a little bit different than you hate people who are like completely different.
Yeah. What is that?
What the hell is a term? There is an actual term for that. Like if someone's 10% different, you're going to have much more problems with them.
Yeah. It's like the most, that's the most hated.
Like there are writers that I get into feuds with and it's like, we're really not that different.
Right.
We're actually, you know, we're both writers, but if there's only this split hair, it causes like bloodshed.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if somebody was like, because I've noticed like the people who hate me the most are just a little bit differently. If it's someone who just doesn't even know where I'm coming from, I don't get that kind of static.
Well, yeah, like you and I could not be more different. You know, I have so much affection and respect and love for you. So, I mean, and we could really literally just totally be from different worlds. But I think you're amazing. So, you know, but I understand that. It's like the people that are closest are the most critical.
And I was saying this earlier, like, because I, you know, lived among black people or I guess in my late teens I started. I mean, where I grew up was all white. But I wanted to be an actor when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember Godspell?
Of course.
I was Jesus in three different Godspells.
That's amazing.
A couple stories about that. But one, like, it was a Center City Philly production, so half the kids were black.
Uh-huh.
And when I had my birthday party, I invited them out to the neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And, like, there were people in the neighborhood who never talked to me again.
Uh-huh.
So that's why I'm so, this anti-racist shit. It's like, okay, you guys came along on the bandwagon when there was no risk to it. Now I kind of have a contrary view. It's like, well, hey, I'm not ashamed of being white either.
Mm-hmm.
now all you guys, when it's kind of not bold to be anti-racist, somebody wants to be a Nazi these days, I gotta at least give it to them for the bravery.
Because
you know they're gonna lose their job, they're gonna have people threatening to kill them.
Of course.
I mean, that's why I like Ted Nugent so much.
Because
In the musical milieu that he dabbles in, pretty much all musicians are liberals.
Yeah, yeah.
And I respect the fact that he's not.
Mm-hmm. I'm
trying to think of other examples of that, where people are just like, they're fish out of water and they don't care.
Yeah.
But I think Ted's charismatic and hysterical, but I admire the fact that he doesn't care what others think.
But he doesn't even seem like conservative. He seems more like, what if anything, libertarian or like a very independent kind of a thinker.
I went to a Catholic youth organization. Remember the heavy metal band Cinderella?
Of course, yes.
Tom, the lead singer, was, I knew Tom. I was in plays with Tom.
Mm-hmm.
I was like 10 years old. My best friend in my late teens, his sister married Tom.
Mm-hmm.
He tells me he went out to the Nugent compound, like in Michigan, and Ted was firing off AKs. And it was around when Ted suggested, like, throwing grenades. Tom's like, well, you know, I gotta go home. But he's sincere. I don't think it's a show.
Yeah, it's real.
What bothers me is when people accuse me of, like, playing a role. It's like, no, it's like, I've got enough shit for... I mean, do you ever... So, with the... Yeah.
Well, I think people are afraid to contest me, too, because then they don't want to be perceived as racist, homophobic, you know, misogynist. You know, that I do have... you know, if you have enough minority statuses, you do get to a point where you feel like that is a kind of power, too.
Or shield, yeah.
Yeah, shield and all the different identities.
Right.
You know, but then, for me, it makes me feel like I'm able to see the world as it is, and not have to sort of conform to anything, too.
There's a word that gets bandied around a lot. Isn't that kind of a privilege?
Oh, it's a total privilege.
I mean, like a generation ago, it would have been a liability, but now it's kind of... You can say things without getting the static that I would for saying the same.
Or a generation ago, it would have been even more powerful. You know, maybe that there is a power in being that... that sort of disenfranchised or so, if you're so outside of the status quo or outside of the mainstream that you're actually more powerful.
Was Korea ever colonized by Europeans?
Not by Europeans, by Japan, yeah. And by China, I think, of course. But
so there's no historical beef between Europeans and Koreans?
No.
Except for the Korean War.
That's sort of what it is the American presence, or I guess European presence in the country. And then whoever knows what is the ancient beef between Asians and Europeans. I don't even know.
No, probably not until like the boats started showing up in the 1700s. Yeah. The English, I mean, that's one of the things with these DNA tests. Because in the redneck, I was always taught I was Irish, and I didn't know either grandfather. So I grew up. It was basically this Catholic neighborhood, Italians and Irish, and nothing else. Mm-hmm. That's all there was. Those were the two races, were Irish and Italian. So I just figured I was Irish, and
yeah.
At least in the whole cultural Marxist, well, you get some cred for being Irish because they were stepped on for 1,000 years by the English.
Mm-hmm.
And I said in the Redneck book, you know, when in doubt, blame the British, because you want like a tiny island the size of the state of Georgia that ruled the fucking world. Mm-hmm. And the sun didn't. But now I took this DNA test and I might not be Irish at all.
Oh.
And it's like, well, so I'm just an oppressor. I don't even have that card to play anymore. Mm. But it's like, well, on the flip side, it's, well, what's wrong with, there's something cool about exercising that much power. Like, England had no resources, but they had their shit together enough to have an empire the sun never set on. Is that something to be ashamed of? Will Koreans be ashamed? If Koreans ruled the world, would they be ashamed of it?
No, I don't know. It's complicated. It's so complicated.
I think civilizations live and die, and I think that's what's happening with Europeans. It's on the decline.
Yeah.
And so humility and self-hatred kind of become a virtue because I don't think they have this fighting spirit anymore. So it's like, hey, just don't. I wrote an article a few years back about what I call Passover syndrome that I think a lot of white liberals have. It's like, well, when you come to kill the white people, like, I'm going to put this big anti-racist X over my house. So don't kill me. Kill the one over. Kill that hillbilly who. But that was one of the things with the Redneck books. Like, the hillbillies were ex-white slaves.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were whites and black. You know, it used to be, when you talk about race in America, it was whites and blacks. Because you guys didn't come along.
Yeah, we have no
until
idea.
Until
much
later. But it was always like a divide and conquer tactic. I'm losing my train of thought here. But it goes back. Like I said in the Redneck book two, it went back and forth. Like, the white elites would favor the white trash for a while, like in the days of Reconstruction, and when the Klan reigned supreme, and now it seems like they're favoring non-whites over the, and but it's just to keep the lower orders at each other's throats.
Yeah, that's right.
And I used to be more kind of Marxist in my thinking that it's all about class, but I'm one of the least tribal motherfuckers in the world. I just, like we were talking earlier, I'm a lone wolf.
Yeah.
I don't join wolf packs. Right. But I kind of tend to think that there is a tribal instinct. Just like in the Victorian era, they repressed the sex instinct. And you wound up with Jack the Ripper.
Right.
And if the tribal instinct's natural and you repress it long enough, once it comes out, it's going to be fucking nuts. So I think, class plays into it, because I relate more to people who were not rich than I do. But I think people are tribal, and I think that's going to be, I think it's a favorite buzzword, problematic, sooner or later. Because I think as whites become a minority, they're going to be put on the defensive, and they might become tribal.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a problem. When I was in Berlin in 1985. I've written about this too. I was in a youth hostel, and this painting still haunts me. You could tell in the background it was supposed to be like bombed out Germany at the end of World War II. And there were these two like German peasant women, and one was going to Sieg Heil, and the other one was like stopping her, grabbing her arm. And you think back, Germany was humiliated at the end of World War I. And the sanctions they put on them were just unbearable. And like, you wonder sooner or later, like, that much being kicked around if there's just going to be this defensiveness that's going to be dangerous. Mm-hmm. My whole thing is like, I used to consider myself a liberal, but I felt like whites wound up on their ass in a game of musical chairs.
Yeah.
I thought that everybody was just going to get over being tribal.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed like the minute white people kind of were convinced not to be tribal,
mm-hmm.
everyone else just ramped it up.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, I wish that everyone could stop. But I'm kind of fearful that's not the case.
Well, I think you have a lot of faith in humanity. You really do. You have this enduring faith in people.
I think I'm a little less naive. I foresee trouble because I think, like I said, you have a lot of... the kids today, I think, have just been brainwashed about history.
That's true, yeah.
I think in a generation or two, you're going to see white kids who just had the shit kicked out of them for being mm-hmm. white. And they're going to say, well, I don't fucking... That's not been, you know, what you're showing in these movies from what happened 200 years ago is not my experience, so fuck you, I'm going to... And that's when I think it's going to get dangerous.
Yeah.
And I'm not, I don't think I have much faith, I just think this is a grand experiment that I don't know has ever been tried with any success anywhere in the world. I mean, you have Koreans who hate each other. Koreans are
the most.
Now we have a country where there's just, you know, it is the united colors, or it's the disunited colors of Benetton.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I still haven't been able to pinpoint it in an etymology dictionary, but I'm pretty sure diversity and divide
mm-hmm.
share the same root.
Yeah, yeah.
And unity and diversity is kind of like 1984. That's like, you know,
right.
Ignorance is truth, and mm-hmm. it's almost like a contradiction.
Yeah.
But I've never had... most of my problems have been with white people.
Right.
Which was... so weird to me because, and I think it's actually some activist nut jobs because I have a search thing on my website. I can tell what people search to get to my website.
Oh, really?
And it's not Jim Goat racist, but if you type in my name in Google, that's what it auto completes.
Oh, God. That's terrible.
Well, I kind of just, I mean, I think, like I said, it's some nutbag activist, but
mm-hmm.
just because I don't follow the party line on it, it is this you're with us or you're against us mm-hmm. thing. If I don't, like, accept this guilt trip for being white, then, well, you must be a Nazi.
Yeah. Well, you don't follow any party line, though, and that's what's so admirable. But I think that, yeah, people do have this knee-jerk reaction to it. But you're against the idea of a knee-jerk reaction. You want everybody to think about their actions or think about all the stuff before they decide to take action.
It's not, like, whatever it is that I am, space alien... I think I'm actually in a really weird way less, because even like liberals versus conservatives, that's kind of a, you know, it's not racism, but it is that in-group, out-group psychology.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, you're gabba gabba, you're with us, or, you know, you're an outcast.
But you have faith in humanity. You want people to decide for themselves.
No, I wish more humans were like me.
Yeah.
But I don't have faith that that's going to happen. Like, whatever happened to me is a quirk.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. I think you want people to realize or understand the gradations of truth that they inhabit and not just immediately decide, you know, just because it's sort of along party lines.
That's asking too much.
It is.
Do you think the world's getting dumber?
It's been dumb.
But I wonder, like...
maybe, I don't know.
I think... because in this website, Tacky Mag, that I write for, that psychologist I was telling you about, it was just so wise.
Mm-hmm.
He had this line, because I'm going to hand over editorial duties, but my job was to select the pull quotes for the mm-hmm. articles. And the pull quote for his last article was, "The chief cause of boredom in the world is entertainment."
Oh. Mm.
People have brilliant. So much just like bombarding themselves, they can't even fucking think anymore.
That's right. It's true.
And I think, yeah, and you would think the internet, like, but it's almost like people's brains are atrophying because it's all done for them now.
Yeah.
You don't have to go seek out the book. And people are just, they've become so lazy, they just believe what the fuck they're told.
That's terrible.
Yeah. It's kind of dystopian. It is, I mean, I think Idiocracy, that movie was prophetic.
Mm.
The only thing that was wrong with it is like, well, not 500 years from now, maybe 20.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah, it's, and again, I think you may be completely wrong about having faith. I'm really pessimistic about humanity, but mm-hmm. I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, Well, it's that hope that keeps you going. You know, it's that hope that keeps you writing and keeps you looking, continuing the search.
This dumb, like, Don Quixote, it's like, well, if I, maybe if I phrase it differently, they're going to get it.
Yeah.
But they don't.
It's noble. You know?
That's, I'll let you, like.
Your search is noble.
Sound the trumpet. But yeah, like, yeah, it's just, and I think about it all the time, and I just, it's not. Like when I was doing Answer Me, the world has changed, but complete different direction than I thought it would. I thought Answer Me would help loosen up people's uptightness about these issues.
Yeah.
And they've just gotten so much more fucking uptight to where it's insane.
It's true, but it's also opened up a lot of people's minds as well. So, you know, you have...
How would you, like in what...
Well, you know, people that you've influenced and the people that you've enlightened over the years, you know, people that have read you and realized that there was another way to think about things. Or that sort of, you know, you gave them a lot of independence.
We were talking about this earlier, like they're afraid to admit it now.
Yeah, maybe they're unafraid to articulate their own way of independence, though.
I hope so.
You know, I mean, that's, you know, it's not brave of them to not give you credit for it, but the fact that they're out there and you can see them out there, you know, that it's powerful and it's good.
No, so I mean, I told you I liked the first. I didn't want this to be an interview about me, but the first question, and it almost has kind of turned into. This is going to be the first article I'm doing for this website. They've done a bunch of reprints, and like I said, Tackies is a much older audience, and this is like 19-year-old kids, and pretty much everything that they published of mine just howls of derision.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can convince these kids that I'm not this monster.
No, you're not a monster. There's like so much more that they need to see about what you do and what you've done. And, you know, this hopefully, you know, will be able to change that. You know, at least they should be able to think for themselves and not, you know, automatically go to some idea.
Well, one of the things the guy who runs the site, and this is going to just come off like log rolling, but one of the things I admire about him was that he'd even dare to put me on there, because it is mostly an ocean of nine reasons he was an asshole for not calling you in the morning type of articles. But, of all the years I've challenged people to debates, the one that took it was this transsexual who said he, she, depending on whether you think DNA or genital surgery determines their gender, agreed to talk to me. And if you want to call the discussion a draw, like I said, I don't think either one of us had our minds changed, but just the fact that people coming from completely different viewpoints were able to talk and not kill each other.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I have a lot of hope for the site, because you don't fucking see that anywhere.
No, and that's powerful.
It's one or the other.
It's powerful. It's great.
So just maybe tell them not to be scared of me.
No, they shouldn't be scared, and they should just be excited that there is, you know, this very important thinker, this very important... Actually, believer, not just a thinker, but you're a great believer in humanity, and you know, they should give you a chance.
I think I'm a curmudgeon, and I'm really misanthropic. I'm not I just think humans are stupid, but I'm trying to get them to realize that. So I disagree with some of the things you're saying. Like with the guy who runs the site, and people like you and Patton, we may not agree on hardly anything, but just... Like, you can see that I'm a human being here.
I think
That's what's missing in so much of public discourse these days. People have that fierce wolf pack, like, you're in or out.
And right.
There's no in between, where once you stop realizing the other side's human, that's when wars
and and it's really bloodletting terrible. No, but I mean, I've always seen throughout your writing and that the love of everybody and everything comes through. You know, there is a lot of you can criticize and you can be, you know, find people at fault, but you also find yourself at fault.
Yeah, and love isn't. I think love is that's gilding the lily. I think. The thing is, like, I don't see them as inhuman. I might think they're dumb as hell. I might think they're annoying as hell.
Yeah.
I might make fun of him. Mm-hmm. But it's like, okay, well, that's a human being. You're just wrong. And what's been lost, like, since I was doing Answer Me, is like, it's not like, well, I disagree with you. It's like, you're evil.
Uh-huh.
It's just like, I don't see how anything good's going to come out of
it. No, because it just cancels out any argument. Then you're just like, it's just blame. I don't know. It's very complicated, but you're doing the right thing. And you're doing good, and you've been doing good for a long time.
Ish posh.
Then you're humble about it, see?
But I mean, yeah, you've known me in person. It's like I'm not this. Yeah. But that's my unique torture. And I told you when I was reading Dostoevsky, like, I identified with fucking everything he wrote. It's like I'd written it. And I haven't been able to track down the quote. I don't know if it was Crime and Punishment or Notes from Underground. He had something like, he was epileptic like I am, maybe autistic like I might be. But he said, I may seem dead to you, but I'm like 1,000 more times alive than you could ever. And I really didn't want to turn this into this whole justifying my existence.
No, but that is true. I feel like you are more alive. And maybe that is why you do become a catalyst in a lot of different, very dramatic events, because you attract life. And life in its very extreme form can be pretty traumatic.
So, how do we call it? This was an interview with you about me.
Yeah.
That's what it's turned into.
Well, I mean, and I think it's really fascinating, and I think it's really important to try to, you know, to understand not only the way that your work has affected the world, but also the way that the world sort of reacts to you, even on a personal level, in relationship level.
Well, it's usually the ones who don't know me that, I mean, well, a lot of the ones who know me hate me anyway, but just because I think it's hard for most people to relate to me, and I don't know why. I mean, you're famous. I'm not.
You are famous.
No, but I mean in a tiny, tiny world. But I think I just don't know how to get it across to people is what the problem is.
Like, you keep doing it. It's good.
Well, because I'm fucking stubborn.
But that's the best, right. And you should be.
Yeah.
And Koreans, it's really good. Stubborn. Oh, yeah. Terribly.
Yeah, that stalker was pretty fucking persistent.
Yeah. I'm and excited to hear about that.
Even mentioning him is going to bring him out of the fucking
Oh, world. No. It's hardcore.
Yeah.
Koreans are intense. But I mean, you know, it's part of the culture. You know, I think we're raised to be that way.
See, I took ninjutsu for a while, and where I live right now, they don't teach ninjutsu anywhere. And it's not that I sought it out, it was just a close, because it's kind of corny to want to be a ninja.
That's cool.
It was just the closest dojo to where I lived. But I was going to take taekwondo, but I can't fucking kick like that. I can barely like kick above my knees, and you have to be super flexible for that. That's mostly just like kicking people's heads in.
It's hard.
Have you ever practiced anything?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, how stereotypical? I'm asking an Asian if they practiced martial arts.
I practiced taekwondo. Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
How far did you have?
Not very far. No. It was too hard for me. No. I just don't want to do it. But it is an intense art form.
Yeah, just brutal. I watched a Kung Fu guy versus a Taekwondo, and there was like a lot more beauty in the Kung Fu. Mm-hmm. Taekwondo was just kind of
blunt and brutal. It's just about self-defense, and you know, it can be really rough, and fighting it you know, it's a sparring. I never enjoyed that.
I used to watch this reality show, The Human Weapon, and you had these two douchebag guys. One was like a mixed martial artist, one was like an ex-football player, and they go around the world and study different martial arts for a week, and then like they bring an expert and they'd have to fight them, and the taekwondo guy was the only one he kicked the football guy and then knocked him out. So I guess it works. I guess being stubborn works.
It's fierce.
Well, I think that's enough for an interview.
Alright,
rambled. I'll cut it down, and I'll show it to you before I let it go live.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. You say I'm humble, but I think I'm enough of a...
I think you're quite humble.
Self...